today on our Tech for Business podcast. Nate, our Director of Cybersecurity, and Andrew, our Security Engineer, are coming to talk to us about upcoming changes to PCI. Is it PCI, or do I have to say the full alphabet soup, PCI DSS?
I mean, if you say PCI, everyone knows what you're talking about, right?
Perfect. Awesome. Nate, can you start us off with, there's some changes coming. They're coming up quick in March. What are businesses going to see, or what should they maybe have already been putting in place for this year?
With PCI, this isn't going to be a podcast that goes into all the different changes of, going from PCI 2.1 to 4.0, right? Mm-hmm. Now it's 4.0.1. But in general, though, with the PCI changes, they've just kind of restructured a lot of stuff around additional clarification, a couple more stringent controls. And then overall, there's also kind of a section in there that allows for more of a customizable approach to PCI. So if you have some of those deep level requirements and you're maybe having compensating controls that you're satisfying with the same requirement, there's additional steps in there to allow you to meet the same standards without having to kind of restructure what you already have. So there's going to be a lot of scrutiny around your custom controls to validate it, but that's the premise of it. But today's podcast is kind of focused on DMARC. It's just a small subset of this, but I thought it was going to be relevant. And the reason why is kind of in 2024, we saw a lot of the major organizations really start driving DMARC for the broader, world, right? And so in, I think it was February of 2024, like Google, Yahoo, and a little bit of Microsoft, they started saying, if you send more than 5,000 emails, I think it's a month, right, Amber?
I think it's a week. It was a week or even a day. Okay. I know it was mail senders.
Yeah, but basically anyone that's sending out a lot of that mass mail, like to your customers or prospects or anything like that, they started enforcing that you should have like DMARC policies in place. The reason why is they're trying to combat spam. Now in PCI 4, I took a note here. It's in section 5.4.1. It's all about the processes and automated mechanisms in place to detect and protect personnel against phishing attacks. So this is still a broad category, right? This isn't explicitly about DMARC, but they do call out DMARC as one of the good practices. And so that's why I wanted to touch on it. It's very relevant to just the way that Google, Yahoo, Microsoft, and all these vendors are pushing everyone at the moment. And then on top, PCI 4 goes into effect in March of 2025 here. And so it's just, again, get ahead of the curve before you're potentially going to be either doing your self-assessments or having a QSA come out of you. All right. And qualified security assessor. That one I remember.
But was DMARC not really expected in the previous PCI compliance, or is this new, or do many people have this in place already from previous compliance expectations?
So again, it's a very generic requirement.
Yeah.
Right? It's the processes and automated mechanisms to prevent phishing. So DMARC has been around for a long time at this point, but the adoption of it has been abysmal, to say the least. I think the last stat that I looked at, I should have been a little more prepared for this podcast, but I think it was something like in 2023, I think it was like 12% of all Fortune 500 companies had a DMARC policy in place. Right. And so it's been slow. Now everyone is kind of turning the dial up and, having to kind of sprint at the moment to catch up. But so I'd say it's not new. It's just a matter of everyone starting to align and say, yes, that is actually a good idea. It's worth the effort to do.
For sure. So we brought Andrew on today because you were on another podcast, another DMARC podcast, where we went really deep into what it is, and I'll make sure to link that. But I don't know if you want to give us like the quick elevator, you know, what is DMARC and sort of how it's going to meet this new compliance that's coming in March, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so I really like to use sending a letter as an analogy with this kind of high level, right? When you send somebody a letter, you stamp it, sometimes you sign your signature and you give it to the post office. Well, all of those things are how DMARC and another two items were called SPF and DKIM. So DMARC is that third step in this three-step process. When you send that letter, you stamp it, you give it to the post office. That's how kind of SPF works. The post office will void the stamp and then go and deliver it to Nate, right? When Nate receives that letter, he can look at that stamp and say, yep, they came from the Minneapolis post office. I live in Minneapolis. And so Nate can say, yep, that's from Andrew. I can trust it. Second step, DKIM. What DKIM does is you are taking that letter and you are signing your signature to it. Separately, previously, you had spoken to a notary. A notary had verified your ID and you'd signed your signature. They took that signature and put it in a public database. Nate then, when he receives my letter with my signature, he can look at that database and say, yep, those two signatures match. I can trust that. The third step, DMARC. Now, there's a couple pieces to DMARC, but to keep it at a high level, there are actually instructions for the post office. So when I stamp my letter, I sign my letter, I go send it to Nate's post office, in this case, Microsoft, will check to see, hey, do you have the correct stamp? Or, hey, do you have a signature? Just need one of them to pass DMARC. If one of them passes, they deliver that letter to Nate. Say Vladimir over in Russia wants to send a letter to Nate that looks like me. It's not going to show the right post office stamp. It's not going to have the correct signature. So what DMARC says to the post office is, hey, if neither of those things check out, throw the letter in the trash, or you can deliver it, but write potential junk mail on the letter and then still deliver it to Nate. So in a nutshell, that's how that kind of works.
I'm glad Ariel asked you because that was a better explanation than I would have done. So,
sorry for a loop.
What does what are the acronyms of SPF, DKIM, and DMARC?
Sender policy framework, domain key identified mail, and domain message. Oh man, dang! I don't know that one. I can't remember it off the top of my head.
Man, embarrassing. I have to go look. So no. Thanks, Andrew. That was a great explanation, though.
So there you go. There's IT guys that just, we live in acronyms, but
I like that you brought up DMARC and, you know, you're confusing acronyms because which DMARC do you mean? Do you mean the demarcation point outside of your internet or your network or this? So even the same acronyms mean different things.
Oh my gosh, how confusing. That is crazy. I was on a different podcast talking compliance, and it was interesting that they had brought up that sometimes putting these things in place do not always mean that businesses are using them to the best of their ability. So for example, DMARC, I mean, is this something that you could just put in place and let sit and then never actually look at? And is that really the best use? I mean, just because it's a little checkbox, are businesses actually going to get its best benefit?
You can, but I don't recommend it. So with DMARC, right? Again, yeah. You're telling people if the address, you know, like the servers that you've authorized have been validated or the email signature has been validated, you know, maybe reject the message or move it to your junk mail. What happens if you move, right? So now you have this, you know, policy out there that says, if I live in, I'm just going to go pick CIT's headquarters, Woodbury, Minnesota here, and all of a sudden I move to Eden Prairie, one of those is going to start failing. So again, you only need one or the other to work. Not all messages support that signature. So sometimes it relies on the address. And so all of a sudden, if your policy still says reject the message and you've moved, all of a sudden all that starts getting deleted, right? So that's why continual monitoring is important, with notifications saying, here's your summary of your email for the day, the week, whatever it is, right? And so should something happen where message has been flowing for the week, marketing decides to switch their email tool, and all of a sudden all those messages start getting rejected, if you're not monitoring that, you know, you're essentially just killing your pipeline, right? Now all your prospect emails and customer communication emails are maybe getting dropped. And so, again, that goes back into the pipeline of your business, right? Let's say that since we're talking PCI, you're an e-commerce site. Mm-hmm. How do you communicate with the people that are trying to purchase stuff off your website? You're continually sending out, you know, newsletters, promotions, everything like that. What happens if 10% of your customers stop getting mail? That's potentially 10% of your revenue or greater, right? That's just a hypothetical. So you have to be monitoring this. There's manual ways of doing this. It's not great. You're going to get thousands and thousands of emails, or there's solutions designed for DMARC monitoring. That's what we would recommend.
And yeah. I do like that you did bring that up. You can do it for free where you are monitoring it. But it is not a fun task. And it takes a lot of time to manually go through these reports that Microsoft sends to you, or Google or Yahoo or all these other entities do. Implemented DMARC for hundreds of domains, and I will keep using a third party, like ones that CIT uses, like Easy DMARC or any of the other ones, 10 out of 10 times.
It's more than just a tool. It requires some level of like monitoring and interaction consistently. It's not just set it and forget it.
Yeah. And just one more kind of illustration of why it's important, because when I first gave that example, it was about like, what if I move, right? You know, I know when I'm going to move, so I should probably update something. What happens if one of your vendors switches where they reside, right? So for example, if I say, I'm always going to use MailChimp as my mass emailer, there's a set of IP addresses that they use for their servers. What if they said, well, you know, we were using Azure or whatever for our mailing system, and now we're just going to move over to AWS. It saves us a lot of money, potentially. All of a sudden, they just switch all their IPs. And now your vendor might have switched on you, didn't notify you. And all of a sudden, now your messages are getting rejected, right? And so I've heard cases of like this. I'm not going to say names, obviously, but there was like a university here in Minnesota, and their vendor switched IPs on them. They had DMARC fully implemented, and all the emails going out telling students that they were accepted into the university weren't going out. And so what happened was, you know, they were still able to mail out the letters, but that takes time, you know, maybe an extra 2 weeks or so to reach the student. As the other universities are instantly emailing their prospects of students saying, you've been accepted, come register, right? The students are already getting into the other universities, accepting it, enrolling in classes. Now the school lost out on potential enrollment and essentially lost revenue, right? And with that school, I do know that it cost them $2 million due to just the one IP switching of their vendor and related to DMARC.
I mean, there are so many things we could talk about, and I definitely want to open it up for you guys to share anything. But my thought is, if PCI is starting to really push for DMARC and have that part of their compliance, do you think other compliances are really going to start pushing for it and checking for it and including it in audits, or do they already? How is this going to sort of change everyone else's experience in email security?
Yeah. So industry standards are slow to evolve. You know, it takes time to write these standards, policies, and procedures, right? Some people who are listening to this podcast may have experienced this problem back in February when Microsoft and Google, they made this, you know, DMARC enforcement change. They had notified a year prior. They had told people all along that this is coming in March 1st. People started getting bounced back emails like, why is this happening? So we have to immediately implement DMARC. To implement DMARC, it preferably takes a couple of weeks to a month. And now it's not time intensive. We need to gather normal mail flow data. So not, you know, implementing stuff when like vendors and, you know, third parties say that, hey, this is important to do, makes it for very painful. So the payment card PCI industry here, before seeing or requiring you to do DMARC, it's just another step in the, another link in the chain. You know, insurance already wants it. Google, Microsoft already enforcing it. It's just another governing body that says you should have it.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's going to become the standard at some point, right? Yeah. You know, and I'm not going to get into technical details. There's even another kind of addition of email security called MTA STS, and it's all about just inbound encryption to your servers and whether or not you want to accept unencrypted stuff. If you will look at that these days, almost everything is encrypted. And so that was just one of those things where it was put in place to say, you should start monitoring even for this MTA STS. But over time, people said, yeah, encryption is just important, right? And so now it's really a non-issue to go implement something like DMARC. I expect to be the same way. We have, even on our inbound emails, we have started rejecting emails that don't better align with this. And I don't know how many companies Andrew has had to go work with saying, we rejected your message because you don't have this configured properly. Can I help you? I'm not going to just whitelist your configured domain. Let's actually solve it and get DMARC properly implemented.
It's a quick comment. So how I mentioned with the signature and the stamp, putting a stamp on an envelope, that's send in letters 101, right? SPF is mail security 101. All you need to do is pass one of the two and it will deliver successfully. So it's kind of, we are not going to reduce our security for you, you know, random vendor, right? It's trivial to implement SPF in today's day and age. So very simple. There's hundreds and thousands of articles on how to do it.
Yeah. And I was just thinking about, as we're on this topic, about just like how to implement it. Andrew, I don't know if you want to give just the 2-minute summary of what actually goes into DMARC. Is it actually complicated, as you know, because I know there's a lot of mystery around DMARC. You know, it took me a long time to learn it myself. And so for someone that has experience like you, Andrew, how hard is it to actually implement DMARC at organizations? And then where does maybe like some common pitfalls?
So like I said, mentioned before, I have implemented DMARC for hundreds of domains. I am very familiar with it. Same with you, Nate. But it is a learning curve. It is daunting. There is stuff to learn. I think the hardest thing about DKIM, SPF, DMARC, it's the acronyms. As I don't even know what off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you what DMARC stands for right now, but I knew at one point in time. So the implementation of DMARC is very straightforward when you think of it in kind of a step-by-step way. So if you had nothing in place, no SPF, no DKIM, no DMARC, and you're somehow successfully delivering mail, kind of that first step. And I mentioned there's a couple steps to DMARC originally. where we're telling the post office on what to do, like writing junk mail on the letter, or, you know, throwing the mail in the trash. That's two of three steps. The first step is the post office will give me daily reports on, you know, what mail that, you know, was sent on your behalf. So Microsoft, Yahoo, Google will send you daily reports, say, hey, I received 100 mail items from this source. So we need to gather mail first, as far as this implementation process goes. That's what DMARC is great for. After we gather that mail, we want to either implement SPF or DKIM. Now you don't have to have both. It's more ideal to have, it's ideal to have both, but they're not both required to pass DMARC. Once you identify who your vendors are, what your main mail platform is, Microsoft has hundreds of articles about their SPF, their DKIM signings, mass mail senders like Constant Contact, MailChimp, SurveyMonkey, all of them all have very well-written articles on how to implement DKIM or what you need to add to your SPF record to have the mail pass that they're sending on your behalf. Once you have DKIM and SPF implemented for the third parties and your own mail sending platforms, you kind of start that full DMARC implementation. So once we have gathered our mail, we know these are all of our vendors, right? We start to tell the post office, hey, start writing on the outside of that letter potential junk mail. Still deliver the mail, but just tell the receiving sender. They can decide what they want to do with the letter. It's no longer, you know, just a, hey, deliver it. After you let that sit for a couple of days, a week, a month, whatever your organization's like risk policy or risk tolerance is, you implement what's called reject. Reject is telling the post office, hey, if it doesn't pass, throw the letter in the trash. In this case, if say something does fail a DMARC record check, it's going to bounce back to the sender. A lot of people back in February, a lot of organizations back in February when Google made that change, they got a lot of bounce backs related to DKIM, SPF, DMARC because they didn't have those things in place. And so that's where from end user perspective, they would see that impact and it's kind of everything's on fire. We have to fix it now because John Doe can't see my cat pictures because it's cat facts month or whatever.
So how do I transition from cat facts?
Yeah. Well, my question was because I was, if you're an IT person sitting here and going, I need to take this step. You mentioned how. So is it a huge lift? Do you feel like I'm going to need to sit down? I'm going to need to be in some strategic planning with someone outside of my department, like a CISO, and plan this out? Or is it something that the IT department can just say, we want to do this, we're going to do it? Does that make sense? Like, how involved is this going to be outside of the department?
Yeah, it all, I think, depends on the organization, right?
Yeah.
You know, if there are a lot of stakeholders, like a CISO, like a marketing department, like accounting, you obviously want to get all of those groups in line, letting them know we're going to do this. I've implemented it for organizations that have, you know, hundreds, thousands of people. You know, they're sending 10,000 mail items every week, right? Also businesses that are 2 to 3 people, and it's like, hey, I trust you, go ahead and do it. And for those, it's usually very simple. For some of the larger organizations, it again can be very simple. You know, they use Microsoft for their mail primary, and they use Constant Contact to send their marketing stuff, and that's it. But the most important thing, the biggest first thing, and this is something IT could implement without really having to involve too many people, is gathering those reports, getting the messages from the post office. It'd be a DMARC policy, it'd be called none. It's just saying, hey, post office, send me reports. First thing you need to do is just gather that information. You don't need anybody involved at that point. But once you do start implementing the quarantines, the reject, you need to make sure that the stakeholders, the important people, the people who are going to be directly impacted are involved, so then they can give you their input. I've seen plenty of times, not to throw shade on marketing here, Ariel, but I've seen plenty of times where like a marketing person kind of went rogue, you know, months ago, and they put Constant Contact in place because they wanted to send mass mail. IT didn't know about it. And they, you know, as we're implementing DMARC, I'm like, who is this sender? We don't know who this is. It's constant contact. IT had no idea. So we implemented reject and those mails started bouncing. Then marketing, you know, does the screen test and says, why is this all failing now? And then we figure out what the problem was or who did it. So it's important to involve the people who may be or likely impacted. But that first step, none. Gather the data, who's sending on your behalf.
Yeah. So just to kind of like help summarize a lot of that, because that's a great overview, is it kind of stresses the importance of why you even need monitoring in the first place. Even jumping back a little bit to why, or like when Andrew was talking about how to even implement it, he started off with collecting the mail, right? It's like you can't really implement it easily or successfully without knowing what you have. And so you have to put in the monitoring. And then back to the collaboration between cross departments, like you had asked about, Ariel, is does IT always have access to the tools that are going to be sending the mail? Probably not. You know, they have an idea of what's out there. It's like, you know, marketing, again, of one of their 50 tools. We probably don't have access to all of them.
You don't have a shade.
I should tell you, it's usually marketing because they're the ones sending out the most mail.
Yes.
So, and we love our marketing teams. But we don't usually have access to the tools, or it might be more of a sensitive solution. So think of like your accounts payable solution. You're sending mail out from there. Typically, IT doesn't see the overall business finances. And so in order to access that, you might need to work with your, you know, CFO or someone that's been designated to be able to log in and make those system configurations within there. And then there's all the other stuff. I think the biggest thing is communicating across the organization, like Andrew had said and just said, we are implementing this. If you go rogue on us, your messages will likely be rejected. So if you ever are going to send out messages from a new system, please just coordinate with us ahead of time, right? And we will ensure that it's at least added in there. There are nuances to making sure it's added properly, but IT someone like Andrew can help you out with that. So, but kind of tying that back to, you know, the PCI is, especially if you're trying to do those e-commerce transactions, not following that process could have major implications to the emails that are going out to your customers. And then just tying it back to the requirement of just trying to help prevent phishing, it's something you should be doing.
I'm sure we will come back to this in the future and maybe have a podcast about PCI, just overarching, like what other things are included and that you should be considering. Is there anything else about DMARC or about these upcoming changes either of you wanted to share or cover?
I would just say, you know, just work with someone like CIT, you know, especially Andrew or any of the other engineers over here, if you don't know where to start. Like Andrew and I both said, it's a complicated topic. It's really not that hard to implement, but the learning curve on when you start like looking at the reports and trying to figure out why things are failing, that can become a bit complicated. So just work with someone that has all the experience. We can hop in and help you out pretty quick. Like Andrew had said, he's done this for hundreds and hundreds of domains.
Yeah. But to also add to that is that there are plenty of articles out there, not to dissuade anybody from, you know, asking questions, but there are plenty of articles out there that will tell you all the finer points. But it definitely does help having somebody who has done it. Now, not necessarily only CIT knows how to do this, because many, many, many organizations have implemented DMARC. But it does help to have a little bit of help. I've helped organizations where they had 15 minutes worth of questions. I answer them, tell them what to do next, and they run off on their own. Others where we, from start to finish, put it all in place. So it all varies.
Yeah. I guess the last thing I'd have is, you know, again, taking a look at some of these the tools. You know, CIT, obviously, we use a tool, but one of the challenges with implementing DMARC is when you have a lot of mail systems that are trying to send it on your behalf. And so I won't get too deep into the weeds, I promise, but SPF has a max of 10 DNS lookups. And so when you say, go look to Office 365, Office 365 might make another lookup and then another lookup and another lookup. And I think MailChimp has 5 lookups and now you only have 10 available to you, right? And so when you use MailChimp, half of them are instantly gone. Now you need to figure out how to divvy that up between all of your other mail systems. So there's solutions out there where you can put in one record, and then when it requests where it came from, it'll provide the right one. And so it greatly reduces the overhead and the friction and the complexity of implementing something as basic as an SPF record, because that can get into a mess as well.
I'm happy that you brought up the SPF DNS lookup, because there's one line of business banking app I will not name that consumes 7 of the 10. And I've, dealing with payment card industry stuff, banking, you know, hand in hand there, it's really great when I have to deal with that vendor to say, hey, you guys are doing this wrong. And they don't listen to me because I'm just a little old. I don't know what I'm talking about, but hey, you know, you're breaking a bunch of other stuff. So,
yeah. So having those tools to help you out, it makes it significantly easier to implement.
For sure. Perfect. Well, thank you both for coming. Like I said, I think we'll come back to this in the future and, you know, maybe talk separately about PCI and maybe revisit DMARC in the future and kind of go into a little bit more implementation. So thank you guys.
Thanks.
Tap record.
Thank you for joining us today. If you enjoyed this topic, please let us know. Like, subscribe, or reach out to us at info@cit-net.com or head out to our website, cit-net.com/podcast. We'll be back next week with an all-new episode.